All right. I will now call the second case on today's oral argument calendar. That case is number A22-81, Goldmount Veterinary Center versus Watonwan County and Animal Humane Society. I apologize for the slight delay in our start time. The first case had multiple issues and we went a little bit over our time, that of course does not affect the time allocations for this case. Appellant will have 15 minutes for its initial argument. Respondent will have 15 minutes for responsive argument, and then appellant's counsel has an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your clients, and you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, I'm Catherine Blomquist Freitag, representing the Animal Humane Society, the appellant in this matter. The Humane Society asked for a remitter or a new trial under 59.01G because this matter was not justified by the evidence and it was contrary to the law for two reasons. One, Goldmont failed to mitigate its damages, and the trial court's reasoning was infected by an error of law that both parties failed to mitigate its damages, when only Goldmont was legally obligated to mitigate its damages. And second, because no reasonable jury could find a contract for ongoing boarding of horses, because the undisputed evidence showed that the contract was for a limited time period and a limited purpose. That limited purpose was for stabilization of the horses and forensics, and that's undisputed. For the most part, the standards of review are not disputed, and the standard of most favorable to a jury verdict, we understand, is a demanding standard, but the Humane Society meets it. I'll turn first to the mitigation argument. No matter how you look at this, Your Honors, Goldmont could have avoided a significant portion of its damages, and that would have been the reasonable thing to do. The law is very clear and undisputed that the non-breaching party, it's their responsibility to mitigate, and Goldmont made no efforts to mitigate. What's worse is the Humane Society presented opportunities to Goldmont for them to mitigate, and each and every one of those were refused. First, the stabilization, which is essentially corrective farrier work, also referred to as staging, was completed in a mere 2 months after the horses were taken there on June 21st. From there on out, and certainly from September, when the county attorney specifically released the horses as evidence, Goldmont had multiple opportunities to release the horses to the Humane Society for placement or to place or sell the horses themselves. They refused.
Ms. Blomquist, isn't it also true that the Humane Society could have obtained the release of the horses by paying the invoices that then had been issued?
Yes, Your Honor. I think, although there's nothing in the record to that effect, I think that you could make that argument.
Well, so I mean, it seems like there was, perhaps either party could have caused the horses to be released by taking some sort of action.
The problem here, Your Honor, is that there was no duty of the Humane Society to mitigate, only the duty of Goldmont. And in this case,
wouldn't it have been reasonable for a jury to conclude that the veterinarian thought the Humane Society owned the animals and that she did not have any right to move them? I mean, isn't that a theory? The jury, we don't know what the jury said or talked about or how they theorized this.
Even if they considered that, the problem is, again, the mitigation. Because from July 24th, when the first invoice was received by the Humane Society, the Humane Society went over to Goldmont, talked to Dr. Kittleson, said, we have a problem. This agreement was limited to staging of the horses and doing the forensics. That was a short-term, limited purpose that was accomplished by August. When you look at the contemporaneous notes of Dr. Kittleson, You look at the notes, contemporaneous notes of Agent Streff, and you look
That is all true. And the jury heard all of that, that being your client's version. But there is also testimony that your client testified that the Humane Society would pay for the evals, the treatment, and whatever, and I'm quoting now, whatever care is necessary to stabilize the horses for their health and welfare. So the jury hears that.
Yes, that's exactly correct. And that is exactly what the Humane Society paid for. The $5,000 and change check, that's Exhibit 18, I believe, is exactly what was contracted for, and it's exactly what the Humane Society paid for.
And wouldn't boarding cost be reasonably included to stabilize the horses?
I think that that is an argument for certainly for the first few months, Your Honor. And I think that that argument can be made, even though it was clear
The jury also heard testimony that Mr. Johnson was told if he surrendered the horses that he wouldn't be responsible for any costs, correct?
That is correct, and that is why we were unsuccessful and our case against Michael Johnson was dismissed in summary judgment.
At some point during the trial, there was testimony on behalf of your client, in support of your client's position, that the veterinarian was told that she would have to arrange for money to be paid by Johnson for boarding. Wasn't that part of the testimony?
I think that was part of the testimony because of the understanding that Angel Streff had. When the horses went to Gold Mount, they were done conditioned for the custodial release is only if they went to Gold Mount. And so I believe that Angel Streff testified he had the understanding that Michael Johnson wanted those horses back. And if
I'm not quarreling those points with you, but you know, ultimately the ears that heard this were a jury of peers and they heard the various testimony. And we're, as an appellate court, we try to preserve jury verdicts. So what is your best point that the jury got it wrong?
I think the best point, Your Honor, is the mitigation argument. Because no matter how you look at it, there was a duty of Goldmont to avoid damages. And they had several opportunities to do that over and over, where the horses could have been placed by the Humane Society. And even starting July 24th, when there was a knowledge of the dispute, the horses would have gone to a free rescue. This is undisputed. Dr. Kittleson admitted at trial, and it's in her notes, that she knew that Prior Lake Rescue could take the horses for free. And both parties' contemporaneous notes say about that, including on July 24th, where Agent Streff also made phone calls to move the horses to Old Horse Rescue. Again, so the board did not need to be charged. And I understand the argument for the first few months. And I'll concede that that is a harder argument for us to make, even though my client is adamant that they never agreed to board. But certainly there is no basis in fact or law for ongoing board when that damage could have been cut off. They could have been at a free rescue. And at a free rescue, no board would have been incurred, let alone ongoing board for several months. And there's no way around that argument because it is the duty of Goldmont to mitigate their damages, and Goldmont did not do that.
Isn't it true that your client wanted Goldmont not just to mitigate or to reduce? It seems like the offer that your client made to Goldmont was, in essence, an offer that Goldmont should compromise its claim for payment for services that were done in the past. And it seems to me that both parties had perhaps an equal opportunity to compromise. I mean, your client could have paid the amount that was then due, and then had the horses released. It's almost flip sides of the same coin. Goldmount had a policy apparently of of requiring payment before animals would be released, and it insisted on that policy. But so there was kind of, it seems to me, a stalemate or a impasse on the issue of payment of past services. But I don't know why one party is more responsible than the other for the lack of a resolution of that dispute. And as a result, the horses were not released, did not move. And then it seems like from that, anyway, but isn't it true that, I mean, but either party, both parties had an opportunity to get the horses released by compromising their positions about the amount then due?
Your Honor, I think you can make that argument, but you still have the problem that from day one, the Humane Society did not think that it was going to be paying board and had not agreed to board. It paid what it agreed to, which was staging.
You know, one of the things that I find a little bit hard to understand is that, I mean, somebody has to, I mean, if the horses are delivered to the custody of Goldmount, they have to be cared for, they have to be fed, they have to be attended to. That necessarily involves costs. I mean, for the Humane Society to say that it didn't want to pay for the ordinarily daily costs of caring for horses, it only wanted to pay for these specified services while they were, you know, to borrow a term, inpatient, you know, they were being held by the thing. It just seems like the Humane Society wanted to get something for nothing. I don't understand how they could expect the horses to be held by Goldmount without Goldmount incurring significant expenses to care for 71 horses.
Your Honor, I understand that argument and I appreciate what you're saying, but it goes back to the way that the Humane Society, and this is how they testified, this is not how they do these rescues. They take them and then they place them. The idea behind having them there at the veterinarian is a short term, it's a limited purpose for a limited duration, simply to get that immediate problem, which was the corrective farrier work, completed. From there, the horses go on to new homes. The idea was never, and this was, Dr. Kittleson knew this in her testimony, it was never for a long-term boarding situation. This was for a short term, for a limited purpose and a limited duration. And I think Agent Streff also testified that from July 24th, when he realized that there was a problem with the invoice, he offered to put them somewhere else where there would be no board so they could resolve the problem. So he was the one that was offering solutions of trying to get this resolved.
Solutions that would have required Goldmount to forego, to write off essentially significant amounts of money for services that they had performed, right?
Humane Society paid for what they contracted for, and they were discussing and trying to resolve the problem of the board, which is not something that they had contracted for.
I mean, the jury found otherwise, and to me, that jury finding that the Humane Society contracted for daily care that cost $25 a day, that seems like a very reasonable finding. Otherwise, it seems like the Humane Society is trying to get something for nothing. And that doesn't make sense to me.
It's not reasonable, with all due respect, Your Honor, for an ongoing period. While I can understand and appreciate the argument for the short term, from the point of September, when the horses were released to them, after numerous attempts to try to get it resolved, numerous attempts where the Humane Society tried to mitigate, numerous attempts where they said, you can adopt these out. And this was from June 22nd, if you look at the record. From the beginning, the understanding was that the horses were going to be released to her to be sold and adopted out. And that's in those initial notes. So when you look at it from the perspective of those facts, it is an unreasonable finding by the jury because they completely ignored her failure to mitigate. And that is unreasonable. I will turn to the contract argument too, which I've touched upon in the mitigation argument. Our basis on the contract argument is that this was a limited purpose of staging and forensics and for a limited time period. The testimony was completely consistent and undisputed that purpose was accomplished by August. And then there was the letter from the county attorney that said to hold the horses. And so our position is certainly from September when it was released, there was no basis for an ongoing contract for boarding. At that point in time, there is no agreement, no written agreement, no agreement on the $25 fee, and certainly no agreement for ongoing boarding. The only testimony was specifically for the staging and the forensics, and all the parties completely agreed to that. And then finally, one other point quickly is that Dr. Kittleson admitted she was holding the horses hostage. That's illegal collateral. There was no written agreement, there was no lien, and there was no legal basis to be holding those horses as collateral. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Freitag. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Corey Genlin. Today I represent the respondent, Gold Mountain Veterinary Clinic. With me at counsel table is its owner, Dr. Shirley Kittleson. I'm going to take a risk here and depart from my outline and just dig into some of the questions that were of interest to the panel. The question was asked early on, Dr. Kittleson specifically say that she would release the ponies if the bill was paid? On page 244 of the trial outline, beginning at line 19 and through 245, line 17, she specifically asked, did you tell Agent Streff on that day that you would release the ponies when the bill was paid? Answer, yes. Then jump to this September timeframe, which is basically where appellant has to argue that as a matter of law, Dr. Kittleson's behavior was unreasonable in her attempts to mitigate damages. If we focus on that timeframe, and by the way, it is a very narrow timeframe. If you look at the appellant's brief, there's really only two conversations, September 14th and September 19th. At which AHS, the two people are talking past each other. My client says, pay the bill. Agent Streff says, give me the horses. She says, pay the bill and I'll give you the horses. So over those two conversations, keep in mind, during that time period, number one, Dr. Kittleson has retained counsel to advise her as to what to do. And she listened to that counsel, which is do not release the horses until you get paid. At this point, she is aware that the county has a form that it executes when it releases horses, and she also indicates in her testimony that she's not going to release them without that form. And that's actually on that same citation that I read already. It's in that section. At that time, she's also subject to the evidentiary hold letter from the county, and that wasn't just a letter from the county. Agent Streff admitted that he caused that letter to be sent by the county. He called him up, said, I think she's going to get rid of the horses. Send her a letter so that she can't. So in the context of all of this, Agent Streff gives her an ultimatum and says, if you don't give me the horses without me paying the bill, then those horses will become yours. She sticks to her position. I will give them to you when you pay the bill. And at that point, Agent Streff says, those horses and the financial responsibility is now yours. And he tells her that if you want to get paid, you need to sue us. And he says that financial costs will mount for her indefinitely. He then goes home and that same day then directs the county to send the release letter saying you can finally get rid of them now. He also admits at trial that after that day, he did nothing to care for the horses. He did nothing to attempt to get them back. And it's clear on the record that Animal Humane Society continued to own these horses throughout this process. But actually, Animal Humane Society's initial litigation position was that we were successful. We successfully transferred ownership to Goldmount on September 19th. And if you look at the trial transcript, page 134, lines 8 through 20, Agent Streff says that he believes that worked. He effectively pushed responsibility onto her. And then we get into this idea that, well, one of the ways she could have mitigated her damages was by adopting them out. Well, as of September 19th, she's in this position where the Humane Society is saying, we gotcha. Those are your horses. And if she had given them away, that would have been an act of ownership. She would have been admitting to that. And this idea that she somehow could have been compensated by taking ownership of the horses, that doesn't diminish the costs. She still has to feed them. They're still taking up space on her for-profit facility after that day. And I do want to highlight also, there's a reference in the reply brief that talks about that there was this contract that my client had agreed that she was going to take them and place them out. That sentence is not cited in the memo because that is not in the factual record. Multiple times, Animal Humane Society said, you may take our horses, you may serve as an adoption agency for us, but my client never said, absolutely, I'll be your free adoption agency after being your free boarding facility. So I want to jump back into my outline if I've got time here. First of all, the idea that there isn't evidence of a contract. Agent Streff admitted that there was a contract, and he didn't use the term later on redirect with his attorney. He started going into board and hospitalization. But when I had him on the stand, I got him to agree that he had contracted to pay for general animal husbandry, and that general animal husbandry, just like it sounds, includes everything. It doesn't just include some limited services. And that's very logical because Animal Humane Society owned the horses. And he even admitted that as the owner, they have the obligations to take care of all of those things. And he admitted that money was still owed on that contract as of the time of trial. That's an admission of breach. And oh, by the way, this idea that Humane Society paid what it believed it was owed, it paid that after we sued them. So it was already in breach, and the jury heard that as well. But in terms of the limited...
Can you speak to whether there's any legal consequence, elaborate more than you did in your brief, as to the decision not to return the horses when the option was made by Streff?
That was certainly, this trial was all about that time period. That's what we focused on was that opportunity to mitigate and was she behaving unreasonably. In terms of legal consequences, I think that's where it fits in, is that was Animal Humane Society's best shot at saying, my client behaved unreasonably. I don't think there's any other legal consequences to her doing that. Does that answer your question, Ron?
I suppose so. So your view is that there's no legal bar. There's only a question of reasonableness at that point.
Yes, Your Honor. I want to get back to the open-ended nature of this contract. When in late June, when the parties contracted for the care of the horses, there were many known unknowns. This obviously we're dealing with medical issues. It's impossible to predict how long it's going to take to get one horse from catastrophic condition to soundness, much less 71 horses. We're dealing with a criminal investigation. We're dealing with horses that are essentially feral. We're dealing with horses that have extreme curls to their hooves. And Dr. Kittleson testified that you can't fix that in one session. You need to trim it. You need to let it grow. You need to trim it again. So the parties understood that they didn't know. They knew that they didn't know how long this was going to take. So now I want to switch into mitigation of damages. The law here is that, yes, my client has a duty to mitigate, but at trial, the defendant has the burden of proving that my client failed to mitigate. And the law doesn't say that my client needs to have behaved perfectly. The law doesn't say that my client needs to have extended every possible measure, only that she behaved reasonably. The law also says that in that evaluation, the jury is to take in make that reasonable determination in context. And the context is Animal Humane Society not paying the bill, behaving completely unreasonably after they've said they're going to pay the bill, after they've said they're going to pay for general animal husbandry, turning around, not paying for anything, and in fact saying Michael Johnson contracted to pay this. I don't know how a non-attorney is supposed to pick through that. But as I said, my client did take steps to mitigate. She hired a professional. She followed his advice. She's repeatedly said that she will do with these horses whatever the highest authority told her to do, meaning the county attorney or the court. She knew that litigation, that criminal litigation was going on. She knew that this had the county and the court's attention. And Animal Humane Society admitted that she always did what the county told her to do. I want to move on to this supposed error of law. So the standard on appeal for the denial of a new trial or remitter is abuse of discretion. But what AHS is trying to do is say that this is de novo review for an error of law. And AHS would be correct if they were actually pointing to an error of law, but there is no error of law. AHS is misreading the district court's memorandum. That language at issue, it's at addendum 13, the district court judge writes, the jury could conclude that neither side mitigated their loss and that both sides were responsible for the ponies remaining at Goldmount for an extended period of time, end quote. That's not a statement of law. That's a statement of the trial court's view of the factual record. You'll notice that that section comes from a part of, or that language comes from a section of the memorandum, which is labeled, quote, verdict not justified by the evidence. So the judge states the standard that she's working under, and then she's going through that evidence. She's clearly talking about the factual record, not the law. So the trial court here isn't even trying to state the law as the mitigation. It's looking into whether there was evidence to justify the non-finding of failure to mitigate. On a more simple level, you have the fact that sentence isn't cited. There's no legal citation behind that she got wrong. And AHS even concedes that elsewhere in the memo, the judge got the law right. And they also concede that the jury was properly instructed. That's because the judge does understand the law. And even if Animal Humane Society can show that this statement was an erroneous statement of law, there's another problem. The July 9th, 2021 findings of fact from trial are in the record at addendum 5, 6, and 7. There is no finding that either party failed to mitigate damages. Likewise, there's no such finding on the special verdict form. So even if we assume that the trial court is confused about what to do when a jury finds a failure to mitigate, there is no such finding. And so even if this was an error of law, it's harmless error because there's no factual finding for that law to operate on. So that brings us to the actual standard here. To prevail on appeal, AHS would have to show that the trial court abused its discretion when it found that, quote, the verdict is not so contrary or against the evidence presented as to warrant a new trial. I've covered the mitigation issues, so I just want to talk through the two factual issues that AHS raises specifically here. First, the $25 a day. There was evidence to support this award. The jury didn't have to find that, but they did. And it started with AHS's own expert. She testified as to the value of feed, for instance. She got that value by calling up the local feed mill saying, how much does feed cost? How much are you selling feed for? She didn't ask, how much do you pay for your feed? And I asked the jury to apply that same logic to Dr. Kittleson. And the record shows that she charges everybody $25 a day. At that rate, she has all the work she can handle. So that's the market price. That's a reasonable find. That's a reasonable basis to find that as part of the contract. And finally, we've got this, as to facts for the damages, a co-defendant, Watonwan County, submitted an affidavit calculating damages at $1.2 million. That was in the criminal case, but they must have had some basis to assert that damages were mounting at that rate. And again, the jury didn't have to find that persuasive, but they clearly did. And that's all my client needs to survive here, is some basis to support this verdict. With that, if there are no further questions, I will rest, and I ask that you affirm the jury and the district court's decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gentleman. Ms. Freitag, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, both Agent Streff's notes, as well as Dr. Kittleson's notes, do have in it the exact basis for the limited basis of the contract. Kittleson has, will pay for time and forensic reports, time 76, invoice and itemized. And while that may not have been cited to in the legal argument part of it, I know it was cited to in the factual part of our brief. Similarly, on page 23 of Exhibit 5, there's also a discussion where Agent Streff talks about talking to Dr. Kittleson and talking about her agreeing to provide the exams and provide the farrier service, again, showing that limited basis. So those, whether they might have been citations, they were in there. Second, as to this restitution, the restitution was not a request made by the Humane Society. That was the standard restitution victim impact in the criminal trial. That should not be held against the Humane Society because the Humane Society is not the county. And no matter how you look at this, this case is very akin to the commercial reasonableness doctrine of avoidable consequences. And while the UCC doesn't apply in this case, and we're not saying it does, it is a situation where you have significant amount of damages that could have been avoided from day July 24th when they could have been moved. And so while the best argument of Goldmont is for that first month of damages, certainly thereafter it becomes a lot more unclear what is reasonable for the sake of Goldmont, because they did nothing for mitigation. They did nothing. There were absolutely no mitigation efforts. They can't point to any mitigation efforts, and they didn't do so in their brief. All of the efforts for mitigation were by the Humane Society, where they tried to get the matter resolved over and over and over, until finally doing in September what they said they were going to do from the beginning, which was release them to her for placement. They offered to place them. They offered to put them in free rescues. It was for a limited purpose and a limited time. For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that you reverse either for a new trial or remitter for the damages limited to the first few months. Thank you.
And just to clarify, Ms. Freitag, you're not asking us for essentially what I might call a JNOV or judgment notwithstanding the verdict, correct?
No, we are not, Your Honor.
Only for, okay, understood. It appears that the other judges do not have any further questions. So.